Now, I've been looking at cyclones and trees, I suppose, since about 1988. I guess every cyclone gives me a little bit of extra information. I was also up in Northern Territory in Kakadu in 2006 when Cyclone Monica came through. And both Cyclone Monica and Cyclone Yasi, being both Category 5 systems, it allows you to do a bit of a transect from Category 1 to 5. So you can really sort of like see the different impacts of the different strength winds.
As you move away from the centre of where the cyclone hit.
That's exactly right, yeah.
How much of a difference could using the right trees make to the damage that a cyclone inflicts on a town that it hits?
In some cases, mean the difference between the survival of your house and its destruction.
Before we get on to some more details, is there one thing through your work that's stuck in your mind that's demonstrated the force that a cyclone can bring to bear on a tree or the environment around it?
I think when you go and have a look at ground zero of a Category 5 cyclone and see that the bark has been stripped off trees and buildings have been picked up and moved off their concrete foundations, you know, this is really demonstrates what a 300-plus kilometre an hour wind with a bit of storm surge behind it can do. You don't really want to be too close to anything like that, I think.
That sounds amazing, and I just assume that all trees would be wiped out in that situation. Is that the case?
No, not at all. No, I guess it's a common misconception that when a cyclone hits, trees are just going to go down. That's all there is, and there's nothing you can do about it at all. But I've found from all the research that I've done that there's an enormous amount of variation in the responses of trees to cyclones, and there are actually a handful of trees that will stand up to a strong Category 5 cyclone. You can pretty much split trees into two different groups. You've very fast-growing and short-lived plants. They all do very poorly. The likelihood of a tree snapping in a cyclone is directly proportional to its wood density. So very fast-growing trees don't lay down very dense wood, and they just snap like matchsticks. But you're very slow-growing species, and these are the ones that normally grow in very high-energy environments anyway. So plants that normally occur on windswept beaches and along rivers that are subject to very, very strong floodwaters and things like that, these are plants that are naturally adapted to being bashed around quite a fair bit. And they are the sort of plants that I find tend to do very well in cyclones.
Can you give us some examples of some common trees in northern Australia in the towns that are particularly bad when it comes to surviving a cyclone?
Yeah, well, I guess I can just cite some examples from Townsville.
Mm.
And in Townsville, we only experienced about a Category 2, which is 135 kilometre an hour winds, which is considerably less than the 300 kilometre an hour winds experienced up in Tully. Yet Townsville suffered terribly from the cyclone. We had 63,000 trees fell down, and causing an estimated $100 million worth of damage.
63,000 trees.
63,000.
Are there any trees left there?
You can't
that
imagine.
Sounds like an awful lot of trees.
Five species contributed nearly half of the damage.
Wow.
So, you know, if we could just get rid of those five species, we would have come out of this cyclone pretty lightly.
All right. What's the list? What are the five trees that you'd never want to grow in a cyclone prone area?
Okay. African mahogany seem to have fared the worst of them all.
Now, that's one that we've heard about before. You do hear, there's a lot of anecdotal evidence as well that African mahoganies are not good in cyclones. Were you surprised then, I guess? Had you heard this before you actually went and saw the evidence for it?
Well, I had seen them previously during a Category 1 cyclone back in the year 2000 when we got hit by Cyclone Tessie in Townsville. And that was not much more than just a strong storm. And African mahoganies weren't very common at that time, but yet I still saw a lot of them falling down. When I was up in Kakadu in 2006, the town of Jabiru was very well known for its large African mahoganies, and nearly every single one of them was knocked down. So I was quite well prepared to see lots of African mahoganies laying down, and I had been warning authorities that avenues of African mahoganies along major thoroughfares will present quite a large amount of problems for emergency services. You won't be able to get ambulance or police or fire brigade into areas that have got a lot of African mahoganies planted along the streets.
And was that borne out? Was that the problem? Did it block roads for a long period of time?
Absolutely. You know, we had one road that was blocked so badly, I said, I just can't imagine us being able to get through here for weeks. And it wasn't long after I said that that they sent in a battalion full of battalion of soldiers, and they cleaned it all up. But it was quite a jumble of timber. It really had to be seen to be believed.
They're tall and heavy trees as well. You can imagine them doing a lot of damage to things around them when they come down. Is that the case?
We have been very, very lucky in that in nearly every example, the trees have fallen away from houses. I guess in a couple of examples where I have seen them go the opposite way, they've just crushed everything in their path. Cars, fences, sheds. Fortunately, I haven't seen any land on houses, but you can imagine a big African mahogany would just about slice a house in half, I think.
So you'd say African mahogany no more in northern Australia?
Well, you know, there may be a place for these sort of things in parks and in larger properties, but you just don't want them anywhere near houses and essential infrastructure, I guess is what I'm saying.
What are some other species that you've seen that cause big problems?
Yeah, the other really bad one in Townsville was the yellow flame tree, or Peltophorum. There are some people who say that this is a native plant to some areas in the Northern Territory, but I personally think it's a fairly recent introduction into Australia. It's certainly not native to Queensland. And these things have caused massive problems. I've counted more than 500 of them uprooted around Townsville. And they're big trees, so each single one of those 500 has created quite a lot of work for a team of people.
Is that usually how a tree comes down, being uprooted rather than broken off?
Well, it varies between species. Some species, you only ever see them snap, and other species, you only ever see them uprooted. For example, African mahogany, you almost never see branches broken off them or their trunk snapped, but they always do uproot. And I guess when I was saying before that tree density is a good measure of whether or not a tree's likely to snap, it doesn't give you any sort of prediction as to whether or not it's going to get uprooted. And another couple of ones, I suppose, are the pink trumpet trees or tababuas. These are an ornamental tree from Venezuela. And in every one of the species always uproots and the other one always snaps in half. And I'd say in each case probably 80% exhibited one of those patterns or the other. And the other one is the river blue gum or Eucalyptus teretocornis. And this is actually a native tree to Townsville, so we're not going to stop planting that in natural areas, but we'll never ever be planting that along major thoroughfares or in roundabouts or anywhere near schools or buildings or anything like that ever again.
Are gum trees generally bad when it comes to cyclones?
Yeah, most gums and acacias are usually pretty bad. They both fit the profile of being a fairly fast-growing sort of tree. The older that they get seems to be the worst because the older that they get, I guess they're more likely to have had their trunks hollowed out by termites and or to have suffered some other sort of damage. So I think, in generally speaking, with most trees, the older that they are, the more susceptible they are as well too. Young trees and saplings are very unlikely to go over. So it can lead people into a false expectation that this tree has survived this cyclone, so it's going to survive future cyclones, but it's not always the case. The older and the taller the tree gets, the more sensitive it becomes.
Hearing about some of the devastation that you've recorded from cyclones to trees, would it be just a good idea not to put big trees near a house? Is that the best way to go?
Well, not necessarily. I think that trees can actually do quite a lot of good during a cyclone. And I saw many examples of where sheets of iron or in some cases entire roofs have peeled off buildings and have gone flying down the street and have wrapped themselves around the trunk of a tree. So as far as I'm concerned, that tree needs a medal, you know. It's that sheet of iron or that bit of roofing could have done an incredible amount of damage either to property or to people as it goes skidding down the main street. This is usually something you see more during a Category 4 or 5 cyclone, where you really get a lot of the buildings coming apart, and the majority of people who are killed during cyclones tend to be killed by flying debris. And so having a lot of vegetation around your property can really protect both yourself and your property from that sort of damage. But it's important that you have to pick the right tree species to do it, because if you pick the wrong tree species, it becomes part of that flying debris and it becomes part of that destructive force.
So what sort of trees are great survivors in cyclones?
There's a handful of palms that I know are very good, and they're the golden cane palm, the cabbage palms, and to a degree the date palms. Coconuts are only good if they've been denutted. If they've still got their nuts on, they're very top-heavy and they will come crashing down and fling the nuts all over the countryside, which are, can be quite dangerous as well. One of the big survivors around here was the weeping tea tree, Melaleuca leucodendra. There's some types of Melaleucas, that, or paperbarks, I guess, that grow out on the floodplains and in open woodlands, and you don't want that sort. You want the sort of paperbark that grows along fast-flowing rivers. And we've had just fantastic results with that in Townsville. Almost none of them were damaged whatsoever. And even up in Mission Beach, at ground zero, category five, big avenue of paperbark standing along the beach, and you know, you only ever saw broken branches at the worst. Also cypress pines and pandanus, beefwood and leichhardt trees. Leichhardt trees are...
They're quite big trees and they have big leaves. You'd think they might blow over.
They're huge, big trees, but the trees, they let go of their leaves fairly early on. And I think that that's a very good survival mechanism for the trees. They reduce their wind loading. They just shed their large leaves. Some trees will shed smaller branches also to try to reduce wind loading. But once the leaves are gone, you've got a big trunk with fairly open branching arrangement that doesn't really present that much wind resistance.
A big tree that you find in backyards of houses right across northern Australia is the mango. Have you got any evidence as to how mangoes survive cyclones?
Mangoes, by and large, do generally pretty well. Once you start getting up above a category three, they will start shedding large branches. And a large branch off a really big common mango can do quite a lot of damage. So you probably don't want big sort of branches reaching out over your house. But mangoes, by and large, yeah, they're not too bad.
And is that a difference you can make by pruning a tree? It's less likely to cause damage?
Yeah, you know, I guess mostly what I've been talking to you about, Ben, is the difference between tree species. But there's an enormous amount of work that people can do to improve the cyclone resilience of their gardens. And pruning is definitely one of them. And it's not just about reducing their height and their wind resistance. It's also about looking at the way that the branches and the trunks are attached. Plants that are very poorly pruned or have been damaged and have sent up multiple trunks, you often have these big planes of weaknesses where those trunks attach. And that's quite often where we see those trunks snapping or large branches being ripped off. So it's important to prune trees carefully, I suppose, and look out for those planes of weaknesses. It's also very important too, I think, the way that people water their gardens. By going around and just doing shallow watering of your lawn tends to encourage tree roots to remain very close to the surface, and that means that those plants are going to have very little deep root system to hold them there during a cyclone. It's best to water plants very sparingly, and when you do water them very heavily so that the water sinks right down and the roots have got to chase that water.
It actually sounds pretty complex. There's different species have very different reactions to cyclones. There's ways that we can prune them. Is there any good information out there that people living in northern Australia can access when they're planting their garden or looking at what trees they've got or how they might adapt their garden to survive a cyclone?
There's a distinct lack of that sort of information out there. And considering that such an enormous length of the Australian coastline is susceptible to cyclones, I find it quite incredible that nobody has ever really looked at this before. During Cyclone Tracy, there was even one caravan park where a large proportion of caravans came out of the cyclone undamaged because they had so many fairly young and resilient trees planted around the place. It is a complicated sort of thing, and it's not going to be so easy as just running around with a chainsaw just cutting everything that moves.